Okay, we have divorced parents, a special needs trust for the child. They have joint custody. You've seen their agreement. The child lives with the father more, and the mother, but the father is remarried and has a wife and has other children. The biological mother comes and picks up the child for like once a month, weekend care, because the child is very severely disabled. So when you have the trust agreement, who would you say controls the distribution request?
You seem to know a lot about this family, Nancy. Are you?
No, just there's the details.
I didn't say any of that on the card.
You looking for a successor trustee?
Yeah.
Gosh, I don't know.
There's got to be something in the decree or in the trust document.
No, they have joint custody. Equal rights.
I think you got to split it down the middle. Does that sound right?
Split what down the middle?
The requests and the distributions and the, you know, whatever they want, the support that's not parental duty of support.
I have actually one that I am dealing with right now. And, you know, actually it's split down the middle, though. She's with mom half time. She's with dad half time. So it really is a very, the time spent at each of the parents' house is equal. But, we had to come together with both of the parents. And so both of the parents can actually request. We let the other one know what's going on and sort of get an okay from both of them to make sure that everybody's okay with it and nobody is having any kind of fit over it. Dad was upset at one point because we're paying a caregiver at both parents. I mean, all we're using this for is a caregiver, but dad was upset that he thought mom was ending up with the money that we were paying the caregiver. And I was like, well, I can also just pay mom as the caregiver. And then he was like, well, why? And I was like, well, if she's giving the care, I can pay her. Just, if we're splitting this down the middle. And so finally because he was like really upset about it. But once we had the conversation, we were able to sort of figure it out. So each of them gets part of the money. We pay for the things that are for her first. And then the because there's an annuity coming in out of that, we pay the caregivers for each parent. So.
Gotcha.
I think you have to be careful because there's also situations where you have one parent that feels like, well, I'm going to use the trust again, and because I don't have them in this case, where they don't have them as much time as the other parent does, and so they want to use the trust to do something special so that the child will then go, oh, well, I like mom better. Kind of.
I'm sorry, Nancy. Did you say it was a minors D4A?
Yes.
First party. So. Isn't it? I don't know. I'm asking this question. Don't you take turns claiming them as a dependent between the two parents on their tax return?
Not automatically.
No. Not automatically? Okay. No. All right. So let's say
it's
you did.
It's very case specific.
But you can, right? Sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. So let's say mom claimed them or dad claimed them last year, but mom gets them this year, and the taxes are going to be a hell of a lot higher this year thanks to the kiddie tax, right? Is that fair? What do you do then? Do you help with the taxes? I don't know. That's sort of interesting.
Taxes are paid out of our special needs trust.
What's that?
To the extent that
it's caused
by the...
Sure. Right.
Yeah, they're paid from the special needs trust.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Okay, here's the last question. Will the special needs trust interfere with my low-income housing? Help.
Maybe. It depends.
Yes.
And, like you were saying, Pete, I fill out the paperwork for folks. I help them, make sure that the information is provided to HUD or to whomever it is. Sometimes we get back with a favorable thing. Other times it's not favorable. It really just depends on where they live. I'll have people in the same county who get treated differently.
Wow.
And so we, most of the time they're okay. Like ours is approved. And they're not considering us as income. And we write something for them and shows that we don't pay for food or shelter and those kinds of things. And so I think if the information is provided to HUD appropriately or in a convincing fashion, then sometimes they're better at it. I've only had one person who was affected by the trust in their HUD. So
I can add a little to that.
Please do.
I've had a number of cases involving federally subsidized low-income housing. I haven't found any housing that wasn't low-income subsidized housing that wasn't federally subsidized. So I think that you'll find this true in most cases, if not all, that the assets of the trust are not counted. In fact, assets owned directly by an individual are not counted. There is no asset limit. There's
right.
only an income,
the income
limit
income.
To the extent
right.
that the amount of income affects the amount of rent.
Correct.
And distributions from the trust are treated as income if they're regular distributions.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're irregular distributions, they're not treated as income.
That's right.
So the bottom line for the trustee, I would suggest, is only make irregular distributions unless regular distributions are awfully important, because regular distributions are going to increase the rent by, I think it's about a third.
That's correct.
A quarter or a third.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Good answer. Thank you. Clyde Farrell.
Yeah.
Okay. I just got one from Renee. What do you want attorneys to put into special needs trust, and what do you want them to take out?